Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders, where we learn about the bold path of building digital products that sell themselves. Let's listen to product leaders who can give us a glimpse into the innovative thinking process. Showcasing and celebrating these awesome folks, I'm your host, UX and product design veteran, Thomas Watkins. Welcome to Product-Led Growth Leaders. I'm really excited about today's guest, Jacob Bank. He has a background in engineering and in data. He's got a PhD in computer science from Stanford, where he's been studying AI since well before it was cool. He's been a director, founder, CEO of previous companies, and today he is founder and CEO at Relay.app, which is a platform for creating AI agents that work for you. Jacob, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. That was almost entirely accurate. The one thing I unfortunately have to admit is I did not finish my PhD. Much to my mother's chagrin, I ended up dropping out after 2 years to start my first startup, which we can talk about if you're interested. So I will forever be a PhD candidate. But never, I don't think in my life ever a successful PhD.
I know a bunch of folks like that who are successful in the tech industry, who went to places like MIT, but didn't finish. Yeah. They go to these prestigious schools and then didn't finish. And then their parents are like, what's
it's funny because Stanford in particular has this reputation, like the Google founders were dropouts from Stanford and all these other people were dropouts from Stanford. And so many of my classmates, when I started the PhD program in computer science, were expressly intending to be entrepreneurs, and they knew that going in. I was the exact opposite. I had no interest in starting a company. I was 100% sure I wanted to be a professor. And then life happens, and you realize that when you're 22, you don't quite know everything, and that you might learn something you like doing better.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And you are where you are today. In fact, we could talk about the first startup that you did so the audience can get to know who you are.
Yeah. So when I was in grad school, my research was at the intersection of AI and productivity tools, in particular, the digital calendar. So we were studying how do people spend their time and in what ways is the way they actually spend their time misaligned from what they want. Like most people, especially in a work context, if you interview them, will say, I wish I had more time for my creative work, but I'm spending all my time doing meetings and emails. And if you interview people about their personal life, they say, I wish I had more time with my kids and meaningful relationships, but instead I'm doing all this other stuff. And what our research project wanted was like, how can you build some AI techniques and tools to help people better articulate what they want to do and then find time for it? I ended up dropping out of my PhD to turn that into a product, which was called Timeful. It was an AI-powered digital calendar that was an iOS application that you would basically put in, I want to run 3 times a week. I want to spend 2 hours every day writing code. And it would help create a schedule for you. Like you mentioned, this was like before AI and productivity tools was seen as something that was possible or useful. So we were a little early, but we built actually a pretty cool product. Had a few 100,000 users. People really liked it. And then we ended up getting acquired by Google. And so that's why I joined Google, and I ended up working as a product manager and a product lead there on also productivity tools, Gmail, Calendar, and other tools within the Google Workspace suite of products.
Gotcha. And that sounds like it dovetails probably a lot with what we're going to talk about today with AI agents. Yes. And so let's take a couple of steps back and really ground everyone in the problem that needs to be solved with AI agents. So we've all got a sort of a glimpse of what AI is at the beginning of this revolution that we've been in for a couple of years now. But what is the sort of new problem or the later problem after the first AI that we're about to be tackling?
Yeah, I see it more as an opportunity than as a problem per se. There are some problems which is like, ah, I spend a lot of time dealing with annoying sales emails. I wish those would just disappear. Or, ah, I spend a lot of time drafting follow-up notes after meetings. I wish AI would do that for me. So yeah, some of the things AI can do for us are tedious tasks that we would love to delegate. Others are opportunities, which are things that we're not doing or capable of doing today, but that AI can enable. And I think the really fundamental shift is from, man, it's pretty cool actually, is that software tools are going to go from being tools that we visit on the web and type stuff into. I visit my email tool and I type stuff into it. I visit my calendar and I schedule meetings. I go to Google Docs and I type some documents. And that's how we think of software today. It's tools. We go visit those tools, we do something in those tools. What an AI agent enables is less of a software tool and more of a software assistant, intern, coworker. People will use all sorts of different words, but fundamentally, it's not a tool that you go interact with. It's something that works on your behalf behind the scenes. So I'll give you an example. I have an AI agent that prepares me for all of my meetings. I don't go to a website and type in, "Hey, who's Thomas? What are we talking about?" No, I have an AI agent that behind the scenes looks at the meetings coming up on my calendar. It does some research on you on LinkedIn. It looks at all of our previous email correspondence, so it has a sense of what we might want to talk about. And then 30 minutes before, it sends me a nice reminder. Oh yeah, you're talking to Thomas. The focus is really going to be on product-led growth. Like, here's the stuff he said is most useful to the audience. Do that. And so I think it's this shift from, and it's now become so cliche, like AI teammate, AI coworker. And I don't want to fall into that cliche, but a shift from a tool you visit to something that works on your behalf behind the scenes is pretty fundamental and opens up a ton of use cases that would not have been possible even a year ago. And there are things that will be possible a year from now that don't work quite well yet today.
So it sounds like a mind shift, and humans have always been building tools and trying to make our lives easier. And so when we get to software, we've got software tools. So then it takes out a certain amount of work, but now there's a layer of autonomy that seems to be layered on
Yeah,
top of
it's I
that.
think the way I would think about it is when you think about what can AI agents do for me, I would think less about what software tools you want to adopt and more about if you had unlimited budget, who would you hire? Let's say you had unlimited budget and you could hire an expert financial analyst and an expert research assistant and an excellent executive assistant and an excellent product designer. Now, not all of those are yet technologically possible. But that's the mindset you should be in. So the mindset I'm in when I'm using our tool and I'm trying to figure out what to do with it next, I'm like, oh yeah, we were at one point considering hiring a content-focused growth marketer. What was I going to have that content-focused growth marketer do? I was going to have them create some content on LinkedIn. I was going to have them create some videos. I was going to have them create some SEO blog posts. I was going to have them do some competitive research. Let me just create AI agents for each of those tasks and see how far that gets me.
Right. So then the engagement and the type of work then changes, right? So instead of me being task oriented, I might say, I communicate a goal and something that I want, and it quote unquote understands, and it can
Yeah,
bridge the gaps.
and this is where we get into the nuances between is it an automation or a workflow and an agent? And there's a ton of debates about the semantics of this, which I don't think that's the important part. I think the important part is, again, I think we can think about it just like you're delegating to a new team member that you've hired. And I remember when I was first doing like manager training, when I first became a people manager, we had to do this training on task relevant maturity, which was a concept I think introduced by Andy Grove in High Output Management, the former Intel CEO. And task relevant maturity is basically a shortcut for like, how likely is this person going to be at succeeding autonomously on this particular task? And then there are different levels of delegation that suit different levels of task relevant maturity. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you hired a high school intern who's never worked before, and you want them to do your meeting briefings. You'd probably say, okay, here's exactly what you have to do. I want it 30 minutes before every meeting. I want you to go visit this LinkedIn profile. I want you to go look at the past emails. I want you to put all those together, and I want you to write a report in exactly this format. If someone has low task relevant maturity, and again, this is not speaking about their intelligence or anything like that, it's just low, they just don't have a lot of experience in the task. You would give them very detailed instructions of exactly how to achieve that. If you're hiring an experienced executive assistant who's done this job for 20 years, you just say, "Can you give me meeting briefings?" And then, yeah, they'll give you a meeting briefing, and you might need to give them feedback and adjust it to your particular style over time. But to me, that's the kind of spectrum between a workflow and an agent, and why it's more of a spectrum than a binary decision. The more prescriptive you are with exactly the set of instructions you want the AI to follow, the more it's like a workflow. And the more you're just giving it a high-level goal, the more it's like an agent.
Okay, so that's really good because it gets us out of the pedantic weeds of where do you draw the line? That's maybe better for
Yeah.
theoreticians, but like, how do we think about that? I think that's a really good analogy. On this question of tool versus agent, it reminds me of what I've been hearing a lot lately about AI versus SaaS. And I'll go to places and people will be like, SaaS is dead. So what is your take on that?
Yeah, like all taglines, I think it lacks a little bit of nuance. So what do we mean? What do we even mean by SaaS? Do I think people will need online structured databases that store information, like a CRM or a project management tool or an email tool? Yeah, like we're gonna still need that. Do I think we're still gonna pay subscriptions for services that are valuable to us? Yes, I think we are still going to pay subscriptions to services that are valuable to us in the same way that we pay salaries to employees who are valuable. Or so yes, we're still going to need some tools to store data for sure. Those tools are going to need to be optimized for the kind of data they need to store. A CRM is different from a project management tool, is different from an email tool. Yes, I think we're going to still pay subscriptions for things that are valuable. I do think the nature of how we interact with our software tools will change. We may spend less time going into HubSpot and manually updating records and more time having an agent do it for us. We may spend less time going into the Gmail compose window and typing emails and more time having an agent do it for us. Or in some cases, we'll do it ourselves, and in some cases, the agent will do it more. And so I don't think SaaS is dead. I don't think everyone is going to roll, like every one person business is going to roll their own CRM. That's crazy talk. I think there will be software tools we pay subscriptions for. And I think we will change the way we interact with those software tools. And so I think software tools, like traditional SaaS tools, they'll still need a great user experience for end users, but they will also need a great user experience for agents, which could mean that they have great APIs or other capabilities for agents. Because in a world where the agent is doing some significant portion of the interaction with the SaaS tool, the SaaS tool is going to need to be better at in the same way that we painstakingly try to make the user experience better, we should painstakingly try to make the agent experience better.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Whenever we're at any point in history where people say this new thing will completely replace this other thing, it usually just ends up being a blend of some
Yeah, and
sort.
I think saying SaaS is dead is the same as saying when Uber came along, paying for car rides is dead. So no, paying for car, like many people will still need to pay for car rides in many situations. You don't have a car, you're in a new city, whatever. You're gonna need to pay for a car ride. And Uber may change the way many people pay for car rides from a traditional taxi service or for something else. And so I think someone saying SaaS is dead, it's like saying paying for car rides is dead. That's not a very good take, I think. I think a good take is that, whoa, this new technology might significantly change the way we interact with subscription software services.
Right. Now, do you think it's fair to see agents as like a level of extract, a layer of abstraction above? Yeah, I don't know. Not to get into the definition weeds,
Yeah,
but.
I don't know if a layer of abstraction is quite the way I think about it. I think of an AI agent. Again, I don't think we need a new construct. We should think of it like an intern or a junior employee.
Gotcha.
And so it's not a layer of abstraction above Salesforce. It's just someone helping me keep Salesforce
Right.
up to date.
Yeah. It's like the way you engage with it.
Yeah,
It's
and in practice, I guess you're right. In practice, it could mean a level of abstraction above in the sense that I don't have to go visit Salesforce directly and I do it via the agent, in the same way that if you have an executive assistant, they're a layer of abstraction above your calendar. But I don't really think of a
yeah.
human executive assistant as a layer of abstraction above my calendar.
That's, I guess
Like
so.
that doesn't feel right. I just think of it as, oh, it's a really helpful person that makes it easier for me to work with my calendar.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, so relay.app, what are you guys building?
Okay, so what we're building is a platform that lets users create their own AI agents. And so you'd come up with an idea, for example, this meeting briefing idea, and say, I want to create an AI agent that briefs me 30 minutes before every meeting. And the Relay platform lets you create workflows and agents that connect to all of your tools and then specify what you want it to do for you. So you could go into Relay and say, yeah, I want to do a meeting briefing. I want this to start 30 minutes before every meeting. I want it to look up every guest on LinkedIn. I want it to look up all my past co email correspondence with each guest. Then I want to use AI to consolidate all of that information it found into a really nice meeting briefing notification. And then I want it to send it to me on Slack. And we have the underlying platform that you can use to create your own AI agents. And we also have templates and pre-built agents that you can just adopt and connect to your tools.
Got you. And not to bring us back into the definitions, but it's not a layer of abstraction, but it allows you to communicate at a layer. So instead of coding something that goes and
Yeah, so
finds the names
let
of
me
the.
maybe draw distinctions between a couple of other tool categories. It is not an experience like Lovable or Bolt or V0. It's not going to build an app or a website for you. It's not like Cursor or Windsurf. It's not sitting in your IDE or being your IDE as you're coding. Think of it categorically more like Zapier or Make.com or n8n or Gumloop or Lindy. These are some of the newer tools where you think, oh yeah, I go into this workflow tool and I create a workflow that connects across tools. Just think of that category, but supercharged with AI. So it's built for non-technical people. It's built for people. This is why I hate the word no code, because even by including the word no, just because code is there, people are freaked out by that. And I was talking with another guy who's been in the no code community for a long time, and he's, yeah, like we've tried so hard to tell people it's no code. And I'm like, yes, but just by using the word code, the fact that you even have to use the word code at all is intimidating to a lot of people. So I don't want to think of this as no code. I want to think of it as a workflow tool or an agent builder that lets someone who's never written a line of code in their lives, but can think in a structured way about what they want this agent to do for them, they can create it for themselves.
Okay, so let's walk through an example. Let's say that I'm a business owner and I'm thinking about streamlining my sales pipeline,
Yes.
and I don't really have a good CRM. And I say, I want to start with the email conversations I've had, and I've had some conversations that went nowhere. I want you to find the good ones. I want you to put them in a table, and I want you to tell me, was there an action item in
Yeah,
that
that's
conversation?
perfect example. Let's say you're just getting started and you don't have a formal CRM yet, but maybe you've got a Notion database or an Airtable or even just a Google Sheet that's tracking your potential leads, and you'd say, oh man, it's really annoying that when I get these emails, I have to go update that Google Sheet, and then I have to think to myself, how high priority is the lead? What was the sentiment of the call? And so you'd say, okay, I'm going to go into Reload App and I'm going to build an AI agent that automatically monitors my emails. If an email is relevant to a particular prospect that's in my spreadsheet, I'm gonna automatically update the spreadsheet row with the relevant information. So it'll say, so you'd set up a trigger for your workflow, which is like when a new email comes in. Then you would have a step that's like a find step, which, hey, do I already have this person represented in my Google Sheet? If yes, do something. If no, do something. Let's say, yes, they're already in my Google Sheet, so I care about them. Then I would say, does this new email interaction contain material information that should change the status of that person in my thing? And maybe to figure out if there's material new information, I need to go look on LinkedIn. I need to go check a meeting transcript from the meeting. And then I would have AI process that and update the spreadsheet. So you still, to use a tool like ours effectively, you still need to be able to articulate, like, here's what I want the world to look like. I want my spreadsheet to look like this at the end. And I want to go step by step, like when the email comes in, do this, then update the spreadsheet. You could also, in Relay.app or other platforms like us, you could build a much more open-ended agent that's just like, monitor all my emails and update the spreadsheet appropriately. Good luck with that. That may work someday, but in practice, that doesn't work today. You need to give the AI much more context and guidance on what you want it to do.
Because this is too many built-in assumptions,
Exactly.
just.
It's exactly the same as if you hired a new intern. Even if they're very bright, you can't just say, monitor my emails and update the spreadsheet. You need to give them some context. Here is the subset of leads we put in the spreadsheet. Here's what the status fields in the spreadsheet mean. Here's how wordy or how concise you should be in your description. And so I think the reason I'm so excited about AI agents relative to other techniques is like, we already have a mental model. We already know how to do this. We know how to work with other people and give them instructions. We know how to give a more junior person more detailed instructions. We know how to give a more senior person more strategic instructions. And so that's why I think adopting AI agents has been way easier and more attractive to people than adopting no code automation tools. No code automation feels technical, it feels like work, it feels mechanical and robotic. Whereas an AI agent, the goal is just, hey, it's not going to have all the capabilities of a human, of course, but you can, for this subset of tasks that exist in the digital realm, you can give it instructions much like you would give a human, and it'll do a pretty good job.
Yeah, I actually argue to people that one of the amazing revolutionary things about ChatGPT is that you can talk to it like a human, and that's really user experience. It doesn't seem like UX, it's because there's no fancy screen, it's just a text interface. But the fact that you don't have to try that hard, it crosses the bridge from
You know,
its side over to you.
it's funny you mention that, because I'll often be talking to users. Like, we do an onboarding call for our users, kind of a superhuman style onboarding call, but ours is opt-in, not mandatory. And users will come to their first prompt box and they'll be like, "What do I write in my prompt box?" And I'm just like, "How would you explain this task to an intern that you hired to do it?" Let's say I was talking to someone who's doing, they sold hardware, like, for to contractors. And they had this task where they had to look up in a spreadsheet how much each item cost and then create an itemized bill. And he was just kind of lost. He was like, "How do I start?" I was just like, "What would you tell a new intern in your office to?" You say, "Okay, look at the list of things the person has purchased. Look up the current price for each of those things. Look at the quantity of each thing that they've purchased. Multiply the quantity by the price. Sum that up in a total and put it in a Google Doc as the final invoice." And you can basically say that same thing to AI.
Could you explain for users who, the listeners who might not understand, what's the difference between getting an AI tool like yours versus using a generalized LLM?
So we and other tools in our category call LLMs. So you should think about it this way. First, if you're doing something once and you just want to have a text conversation, go to ChatGPT. Go, type in ChatGPT.com and go talk to ChatGPT. If you want to do something many times and you want to get data into or out of your tools, use a tool like ours. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you want to ask ChatGPT to research some information about a company website. And you want to do that exactly once, and then you want to go back and forth with ChatGPT and say, "Oh, no, I want this piece of information, not that information." Go to ChatGPT. Let's say you have a spreadsheet of 1,000 companies and you want to research each of them and write it back to the spreadsheet, then you need a tool like ours.
Gotcha. Really? So it's the same thing as any kind of automation. So instead of hammering in each nail of a nail gun, like I want to do this
Exactly.
lots of times.
And that's why you have to make sure the juice is worth the squeeze. If it's something you're only going to do once a year, you might not need to automate it. Just go to ChatGPT and do it. If you're enriching 10 leads every day, yeah, you're probably going to want to take that same exact prompt, the same exact prompt you wrote into ChatGPT, and just use that as an AI step in Related App in your workflow.
What's the user interface for you guys? Is it mainly a chat interface and that the sell of the product is, or is there
This is
specific?
evolving. Right
Okay.
now, it is primarily a workflow builder. You can think of it like a flowchart builder, where you say, first this happens, then do this, then in one case do this, in another case do this, and you're clicking around constructing this visual flowchart. Or you can think of it as, because most of our workflows are kind of step by step, constructing a step by step list of what you want the AI to do. Over time, I think our interface is going to move to being more and more natural language, where you'll say in natural language, "I want a workflow that does this," and then we will generate the flowchart for you. So you can then still manipulate the flowchart. I think that's going to be a really important component. But fundamentally, I think our interface will always be a combination of natural language and this flowchart. I think the flowchart is super important, because the biggest thing holding AI systems back right now from being useful is not their capability. It's transparency and trust. AI systems are remarkably capable, but they take some tinkering to get right. And you want to feel confident that, okay, first it's going to do this, then it's going to do this, then it's going to do this, then I'm going to have the chance to intervene. And I think that's why this intermediate representation of a flowchart, which many people are familiar with flowcharts, right? Like, you go to the DMV and on the board there's a flowchart that's like, first go to this station, then go to that station, then go to this station. Like, we all interact with flowcharts day to day. Creating a flowchart can be tricky, but we all know how to read a flowchart. And so my goal is that we get to the point of the product where you express in natural language what you want to do. We then show you the flowchart and say, "Is this what you want?" And then you can either just modify the flowchart directly or give us some more instructions.
I've often thought that there's a big opportunity for interfaces with these AI tools because we've had this great, huge technological revolution, but then we've also returned to the primitive CLI state
Yeah,
and have a.
exactly. And like, I really, and yes, I like the fact that we know how to give instructions to a human in text, but I think chat interfaces are like the wrong interface for almost everything. But like, it turns out images and buttons are really nice.
Absolutely. Now, how do people go ahead and get started with Relay?
Yeah, so the best way, so there's two ways to get started. One is You go fully self-serve, you go to Reload app, it's a totally self-serve product-led experience. You go sign up, you build your first workflow. The second thing that could be useful is I run Build With Me sessions every Wednesday, 9:30 a.m. Pacific time, where we pick a specific use case and we will build an AI agent together in 1 hour. And the sessions, obviously, they're fun for me because I love this stuff, but other people say they're fun too, because there's so much hype and so many shiny demos and so much over-promising that I found the best antidote to that is just sit down with me for an hour and let's actually build something useful together. And that'll give you intuition about what works and what doesn't.
That sounds outstanding. I hope everybody checks that out. We've been talking with Jacob Bank of Relay.app. Thank you so much, Jacob, for being on the show.
Thanks, Thomas. This is a blast.
Thank you for tuning in. Join us next time on Product-Led Growth Leaders. Take care.